Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Just take a moment to think about it. This invisible architecture all around us, making our digital lives possible. Every scroll, every stream, every video call that just works it relies on this, huge unseen network, towers, fiber, stuff working behind the scenes.
Absolutely. It's easy to take for granted.
It really is like the nervous system of modern communication, right? Silent but totally vital. Today, we're going to pull back the curtain, take a deep dive into a company that's literally the backbone of Europe's mobile connectivity.
And that company is Cellnex Telecom.
Exactly. Cellnex Telecom, a giant in its field, really, keeping millions connected. So, what's the story here? What's happening with this critical player?
Well, it's a fascinating story. And like you said, it really mirrors these bigger economic shifts we're seeing globally. We're focusing on Cellnex Telecom, SA. They are Europe's largest independent operator of wireless infrastructure.
Biggest, yeah.
The biggest. And they're not just involved in the 5G rollout, they're absolutely central to it. But what's really interesting here, and what we'll unpack today, is how a company this big, after this period of, well, frankly, aggressive expansion,
Hypergrowth almost.
hypergrowth, yeah, good word. How they've had to fundamentally rethink their whole strategy. They call it their next chapter.
The next chapter,
Right?
yeah.
It's a shift away from that acquisition-heavy model towards focusing on, organic growth, getting more efficient, and importantly, starting to return cash to shareholders.
And this wasn't just a choice they made out of the blue.
No, not entirely. I mean, it's a
Yeah.
direct response to huge changes in the global economy, especially, the end of that zero interest rate period. That really forced their hand. Like it did for a lot of capital-hungry businesses.
Got it. That sets the stage perfectly for our deep dive today. So our mission really is to understand how Cellnex works, why this big strategic shift is happening now, and what this next chapter means for, well, telecom infrastructure in Europe.
And ultimately, for all of us,
Yeah.
how we stay connected.
Exactly. And for you, our listener, we've dug through a ton of material, investment analyses, company reports, market views, and we've distilled it all down. We're aiming for a clear, curated picture of this whole evolution.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, let's start broad. The European telecom sector itself, it's huge, right? And growing.
Oh, absolutely massive. And the growth projections are pretty strong.
Yeah, I saw figures like growing from maybe $546 billion in 2025 to over $730 billion by 2030.
That's the ballpark, yeah. Roughly a 6.3% compound annual growth rate, which is, pretty healthy for a sector this size.
And what's really driving that? Is it just more people using phones?
It's mainly the amount of data we're all using, mobile data consumption. It's just relentless, exponential, really.
Just think about streaming, social media, navigation.
Everything, smart homes, connected devices,
Yeah.
it all adds up. We're living in this data-hungry world, and that appetite just keeps growing.
Right. And that hunger for data connects directly to 5G, doesn't it?
Absolutely critically, this massive data growth is what makes the whole 5G deployment necessary and viable. And it's so important to get this. 5G isn't just, 4G, but a bit faster.
Right, it's more fundamental.
It's totally fundamental. Think of it like the internet arriving or electricity way back when. It's enabling a whole new wave of tech.
Like what specifically?
Well, the Internet of Things, IoT. Billions of devices talking to each other, industrial sensors, smart cities. Then there's edge computing, processing data closer to where it's needed. Super important for things that need instant responses.
Autonomous cars, maybe.
Exactly. Connected vehicles need that real-time communication. And things like advanced e-health, remote surgery, patient monitoring that needs ultra-reliable, super low-latency connections. 5G provides that.
And the tech itself demands more infrastructure.
Precisely. The technical specs of 5G. Much higher bandwidth for all that data, much lower latency for those instant responses. It means you need a denser network. More sites, closer to people and devices. You can't just upgrade the old towers, you need more physical points of presence. Without that physical backbone, 5G just stays potential.
That really highlights how crucial this infrastructure is. But okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Like you said earlier, Europe has these big 5G ambitions, right? But the rollout, well, it hasn't exactly been smooth sailing.
No, it hasn't. Compared to North America or parts of Asia, Europe's definitely seen some challenges.
I even saw a quote from a senior EU official calling it a disaster, which sounds pretty bad.
Disaster is strong language, for sure, but it reflects the frustration.
But could this lag, this implementation gap, actually be an opportunity for someone like Cellnex, like a longer runway for investment?
You've hit on a really key point there. While it's a problem for Europe's digital goals for an infrastructure provider, this gap absolutely represents a sustained, large-scale investment opportunity.
Why the lag, though? Is it just one thing?
It's complex. You've got fragmented regulations across different countries, intense competition between the mobile operators, the MNOs, which squeezes their profits and leaves less cash for investment. Sometimes slow permitting for new tower sites, too.
Okay. But the need is still there.
The need is definitely there.
Yeah.
And the estimates for closing Europe's digital infrastructure gap are huge. We're talking over $130 billion needed annually.
Wow.
Yeah. And a big chunk of that MNO capital spending has to go to infrastructure providers like Cellnex. Plus, the European Commission is pushing hard now. They have the 5G Action Plan, the Digital Networks Act.
They're trying to catch up.
Trying to catch up. The goal is 5G coverage in all populated areas by 2030. So you have this top-down policy push meeting the bottom-up demand for data. That means sustained demand for Cellnex infrastructure for, well, at least the next decade. It's a long runway.
That runway is key.
Okay.
Let's zoom in on the towers themselves,
yeah.
The competitive landscape. It's kind of weird, isn't it? Europe has more towers than the U.S., but fewer tenants on each one.
That's right. The average tenancy ratio is significantly lower. It's around 1.4 tenants per tower in Europe, compared to maybe 2.3 in the U.S.
So less sharing of the infrastructure.
Exactly. And that's not just a statistic. It points directly to a big opportunity for organic growth through co-location, getting more operators onto the existing towers.
And who are Cellnex's main competitors in this space?
Well, their main independent rivals are American Tower's European Operations, their big U.S. player, and Vantage Towers. Vantage was spun out of Vodafone, then taken private.
So with that lower tenancy ratio, what's the implication for Cellnex's strategy, especially this next chapter?
It's huge. It feeds right into it. That 1.4 number means there's a lot of room, a lot of headroom, to add more tenants to their existing sites without spending loads of capital building new ones. That's very efficient growth.
Makes sense.
But this also connects to another massive theme changing the industry, MNO consolidation. Mobile network operators merging.
Right, we're seeing that happen more now.
Definitely. Europe's market was super fragmented for ages, like 90 different operators just a few years back.
90? Wow.
Yeah. Intense competition, which sounds good for consumers, maybe, but it often meant terrible financial returns for the operators themselves. Strained balance sheets, not enough money to invest properly in 5G.
So regulators are changing their tune.
They seem to be. They used to focus purely on maximizing the number of players. Now there seems to be more willingness to approve mergers, creating fewer but financially stronger operators who can actually afford these big network investments.
Like the MásMóvil Orange deal in Spain?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That completed in March 2024, created a much bigger player. And we're expecting Vodafone Italia and Swisscom's Fastweb to combine soon, probably early 2025.
So this raises a really important question. For a tower company like Cellnex, is MNO consolidation good news or bad news?
Ah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's genuinely a double-edged sword. Well, on one hand, having bigger, financially healthier tenants is generally good. You want your customers to be strong, able to invest long-term, pay their bills reliably. Stronger MNOs mean more reliable rent, potentially more 5G investment. That's the positive side.
Okay, but the other edge?
The other edge is network rationalization. It's a big risk. When two operators merge, they inevitably have overlapping networks, redundant towers, duplicated equipment.
Right. They don't need two towers side by side.
Exactly. So the merged company will look to decommission those redundant sites to save money, achieve those merger synergies. And that could mean fewer tenants on Cellnex's towers, which directly hits their revenue. It's a real balancing act.
A tricky situation.
It is. And this is where you connect it all. The changing regulations favoring consolidation, plus the higher interest rates we've seen since 2022.
How do interest rates play into this?
Well, for MNOs, holding these big capital-heavy tower portfolios on their books becomes really inefficient when interest rates are high. Their return on capital, the ROCE, was only about 5.9% in 2023.
Pretty low.
Very low. If your cost of borrowing is higher than your return on assets, you're essentially losing money just by owning them.
So selling the towers makes sense for them.
It makes a lot of sense. Selling tower portfolios to a neutral host like Cellnex is a great way for MNOs to raise cash, pay down debt, and just focus on their core business of providing mobile services.
So Cellnex might not be buying big independent tower companies anymore.
That era might be largely over, yeah. But the opportunity to buy tower portfolios directly from MNOs who want to sell, that could actually speed up in this environment.
Okay, let's unpack this. Cellnex's actual business model. How do they create value? It's all about being a neutral host, right? What exactly does that mean?
Right. Neutral host is the key concept. It means Cellnex builds or buys and then operates the passive part of the network, the physical tower structure, the land it's on, the power supply.
Not the antennas and radios.
No, those are the active elements. Yeah. The MNOs put their own active gear onto Cellnex's passive infrastructure. Cellnex leases space on its towers to multiple operators.
Well, everyone shares the same tower.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that drives huge efficiency. MNOs don't have to waste money building duplicate towers everywhere. This model gives Cellnex what we call the TowerCo advantage. It rests on three really strong pillars.
Okay, who are they?
First, long-term predictable revenues. This is crucial. Cellnex signs master service agreements, MSAs, with tenants. These typically run for 15, 20 years initially.
Wow, that's long.
Very long. And they often have renewal periods plus these important all-or-nothing clauses. That makes it hard for an MNO to just cherry-pick sites to drop. It gives Cellnex amazing visibility into future revenues. Really valuable for planning.
Okay, predictability. What's next?
Second, inflation protection. Most of these long contracts have escalators built in, usually linked to the Consumer Price Index, CPI.
So rents go up with inflation.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a powerful hedge, preserves the real value of their cash flows over time. Really important in the kind of inflationary environment we've seen lately.
Makes sense. And the third pillar?
High operating leverage. Think about it. The cost of a tower is mostly fixed up front, building it or buying it,
right,
plus ongoing ground lease, maintenance, power.
Right.
But the extra cost of adding a second tenant or a third or a fourth, it's minimal, just bolting on some more equipment.
So each new tenant is almost pure profit.
Very high incremental profit margins, yes.
Yeah.
And this is where independent tower cos like Cellnex really win. They are incentivized to get as many tenants as possible onto each tower. That leads to higher tenancy ratios, better capital efficiency than if an MNO just owned its own towers for itself.
That really clarifies the power of that model, and Cellnex certainly used it during that growth spurt from just Spain to being the leader across Europe.
Absolutely. They went on an incredible run, now operating in 12 countries, over 130,000 sites. It's a massive footprint.
Were there any specific deals that really stand out from that period?
Oh, yeah. Two huge ones really defined that expansion. First, the multi-country deal with Iliad back in 2019 that brought them towers in France, Italy, and later Poland. Big markets, instantly. And then the real blockbuster.
Hmm.
The $10 billion acquisition of CK Hutchison's European towers. That was 2020-2021, covering six countries, including major ones like the UK and Italy.
10 billion euros. That's huge.
It was transformative. These weren't just acquisitions. They were strategic moves that built their dominant position across the continent.
And they're not just about the big macro towers anymore, are they? They're moving into other areas too.
Exactly. They've been strategically expanding into adjacent infrastructure. It's not just diversification for the sake of it. It's really crucial for enabling 5G properly.
Like what sort of things?
Well, DAS distributed antenna systems and small cells. These are vital for dense areas where the big towers struggle to provide enough capacity or coverage. Think stadiums, train stations, busy city centers.
Filling in the gaps.
Precisely. And that segment is growing fast. Saw 21% organic growth in Q1 2024. Then there's fiber, connectivity and housing. They provide fiber to the tower. The backhaul connection that carries all the data from the tower back to the core network. Absolutely essential for 5G speed.
Right. 5G needs fast connections to the tower too.
Exactly. And they offer space in data centers for MNO's equipment. That segment grew even faster, 24% organically in Q1 2024. Plus, they still leverage their history in broadcasting and are involved in IoT services, too.
So, connecting the dots. This isn't just adding services. It's about capturing more of the MNO's 5G spending.
That's the core idea. It positions Cellnex as a complete infrastructure partner, not just a tower landlord. It helps them capture value across the network architecture and, importantly, defends them against potential future technology shifts that might impact the pure macro tower model. It's about long-term relevance.
Future-proofing, basically. Okay, that makes sense. Now, let's get to this dramatic shift you mentioned, the next chapter, announced in 2022. A pivot away from that M&A-driven growth.
Right, away from being an aggregator.
Towards being an industrial operator.
Yeah.
Focusing on organic growth, efficiency, shareholder returns. And you said, here's where it gets really interesting. This wasn't entirely voluntary. It was driven by external forces.
That's the crux of it. The main catalyst was the end of the zero interest rate era. Suddenly, money wasn't cheap anymore.
Right, rates shot up.
They shot up fast. And Cellnex's whole M&A model relied on using low-cost debt to buy assets, hoping the returns would be higher than the borrowing cost. When rates rose, that model just stopped working.
Made acquisitions too expensive.
Prohibitively expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
And the market saw this immediately. Highly leveraged companies like Cellnex got hammered. Their share price took a big hit.
So management had to change course.
They really had to. Pivoting to paying down debt, deleveraging, and getting a solid investment-grade credit rating became the absolute top priority. It wasn't just about looking good. It was about reducing their borrowing costs, ensuring they can still fund their operations, and crucially, rebuilding investor confidence.
And this changes the risk profile.
Fundamentally. The big risk before was integrating all those huge acquisitions, making the deals work financially. That risk is reducing now, but it's being replaced by operational execution risk. Can they actually deliver on these complex efficiency plans across 12 countries? It's a different kind of challenge. The focus shifts from deal-making skill to operational management skill.
Okay, so this next chapter strategy, you said it has four pillars?
That's right. Focus, efficiency, responsibility, and returns. The main goal is clear. Get the most value out of the assets they already own, fix the balance sheet, get that investment grade rating, and then start returning cash to shareholders. A totally different playbook.
And the growth engine now is organic, squeezing more out of the existing towers?
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
Maximizing the value of the existing base. They're really focused on increasing that tenancy ratio we talked about. The target is to get from 1.59 tenants per site in Q1 2025 up to 1.64 by 2027.
How do they do that?
Two main ways. First, co-locations. Signing up new tenants for space on their existing towers. As we said, this is super profitable because the extra cost is tiny. Most of that new rent flows straight to the bottom line. Co-locations were a big growth driver in Q1 2024, pushing up points of presence. That's basically the number of paying tenants by 7.5%.
Okay, adding tenants to existing sites, what's the second way?
Build-to-suit programs, or BTS. This is where they build new towers, but only when they have a main tenant, an anchor MNO, already signed up with a long-term contract before construction even starts.
So guaranteed revenue from day one.
Exactly. It's more capital-intensive than co-location, obviously,
yeah.
But it's disciplined growth. Expands the asset base smartly and creates new platforms for future co-location growth. BTS added about 3% to POC growth in Q1 2024. So it's a balanced approach.
And a huge part of this is the efficiency and margin enhancement program, aiming for a 500 basis point improvement in their EBITDA after leases margin. That's a 5 percentage point jump.
It's incredibly ambitious, aiming for 64% margin by 2027. For a company this size, finding those kinds of savings requires serious work.
How are they planning to achieve that? It sounds tough.
It is tough, but they have a detailed plan. One really innovative part is lease cost optimization. They're setting up this thing called LandCo.
LandCo.
Yeah. The idea is to actually buy the land under their towers or secure very long-term usage rights. They're starting with 10,000 sites in their five biggest markets.
Why is that such a big deal?
Because right now, ground lease payments are a major ongoing operating expense, often linked to inflation. By buying the land, they turn that variable operating cost into a fixed asset they own and appreciate.
Ah, okay. More stability, better margins.
Exactly. Better margin stability, more predictable costs, potentially better financing options later. It removes a big chunk of variable expense. Beyond LandCo, they're pushing hard on general operational excellence.
Like what?
Things like managing their huge tower portfolio more effectively, maybe segmenting it, streamlining maintenance using data, predictive analytics, trying to fix things before they break, using digital tools for remote monitoring to cut down on site visits. It all adds up.
It really shows that shift, doesn't it? From just getting bigger to getting better, more efficient.
Absolutely. It's the sign of a maturing company focusing on extracting every bit of value from what they already have. Disciplined, smart management.
And this all ties into their capital allocation strategy, where the number one goal is that investment grade rating, which you mentioned S&P gave them ahead of schedule in 2024. That must have been a relief.
Oh, a huge validation of their efforts. And getting that rating is critical.
Why specifically?
Well, it means they can borrow money more reliably and, crucially, more cheaply. For a business carrying a lot of debt, that's vital. It lowers refinancing risk, lowers their overall cost of capital, makes every investment more profitable.
And they've been selling off assets to help pay down debt, too.
Yes, targeted disposals. They sold some assets in France as part of an antitrust requirement from a previous deal. They sold a specialized private networks business called Edzcom, and they exited Austria and Ireland completely.
Streamlining the footprint.
Exactly. Focusing on core markets, raising cash, showing commitment to that balance sheet strength. It sends a strong signal to both debt and equity investors.
So what's the debt situation now? It was pretty high.
It was. At the end of 2023, net financial debt was around $17.3 billion. Still a big number, but coming down from nearly $20 billion the year before. And crucially, as you mentioned, they've been proactive. Around 76% of that debt was fixed rate in early 2024.
Which is a good shield against rising
A
rates.
very important shield. It provides a lot of insulation from interest rate shocks.
And all this financial discipline leads to shareholder returns.
That's the payoff, yes.
Yeah.
It's a landmark development, really. They formally started a shareholder remuneration policy. It signals they've turned the corner, generating more cash than they need for internal investments.
What form did that take?
Well, they kicked off with an 800 million share buyback program in early 2025, which they completed in the second quarter, directly returning cash. And looking ahead, they've committed to a minimum annual dividend of 500 million starting in 2026.
A regular dividend, that's a big step.
It is. And their new leverage target, aiming for 5.0x to 6.0x net debt to EBITDA, is designed to give them flexibility. They can pay that dividend, potentially add extra returns like more buybacks or fund specific high return growth projects, all without messing up the balance sheet again.
Okay, let's look at the numbers that show this transition. Fiscal year 2022, still feeling the effects of the big buys.
Yeah, 2022 was still reflecting that consolidation. Revenue was up 38% to $3.5 billion. Adjusted EBITDA hit $2.63 billion. Good top line growth.
Not the bottom
The
line.
bottom line showed the costs, high depreciation from all the new assets, higher finance costs. They reported a net loss of $297 million, and free cash flow, FCF, was negative $1.1 billion, burning cash.
Ouch. But then 2023 was the turnaround year.
2023 was pivotal. Revenue kept growing strongly, up 14% to $4.05 billion. Adjusted EBITDA also up 14.4% to $3.01 billion. But the huge news was cash flow.
It turned positive.
Yes, free cash flow flipped to positive $150 million. They actually hit their 2024 target a year early. That was a massive proof point for the new strategy.
And what about that other metric, RLFCF?
Recurring levered free cash flow. That's management's preferred metric, obviously cash flow from core ops available for debt paydown or returns. That grew a healthy 13% in 2023 to $1.55 billion. Shows the underlying cash generation improving significantly.
And has that momentum continued into 2024 and 2025?
It absolutely has. The
Yeah.
results keep validating the strategy. First half of 2024 showed strong organic growth, 7.4% revenue, 10.7% on EBITDA.
Wow, margin expansion there.
Yeah, showing the efficiency efforts kicking in.
Yeah.
And Q1 2025 continued the trend. 6.3% organic revenue growth, 8.7% EBITDA growth. It's this consistent delivery that's building credibility.
Let me just quickly recap those key 2022 versus 2023 figures.
Revenue went from 3.5 BN to 4.05 BN, up almost 16%. Adjusted EBITDA from 2.6 BN into 3.0 BN, up 14%. RLFCF from 1.37 euro to 1.55 BN, up 13%. And the big one, free cash flow went from minus 1.1 BN to plus 150 meters, and net debt fell over 12% from 19.7 BN to 17.3 BN.
That table really tells the story of that inflection point. Amazing turnaround.
It really is.
Okay, so Cellnex has been on this incredible journey. Its valuation must have been a roller coaster too. You mentioned it peaked very high during the M&A frenzy.
Oh, absolutely. A remarkable valuation journey. At the end of 2020, peak M&A, zero interest rates. The market valued it incredibly richly. Its enterprise value to EBITDA multiple hit 54.2 times.
54 times EBITDA, that's huge.
Astronomical, really, based on expectations of endless growth funded by cheap money.
So what happened? What does this mean for where it stands now?
Well, reality bit. As rates rose in 2022 and the strategy pivoted, the market re-rated the stock hard, that multiple collapsed. Down to 23.3x by end of 2022, then 17.1x by end of 2023. It seems to have stabilized more recently, kind of bouncing around the 14x to 17x EBITDA range over the last 12 months or so.
And that compression, that derating, it's basically because the growth story changed and borrowing got expensive.
Exactly. Two things. The market adjusted expectations from M&A-fueled growth to slower, steadier organic growth. And secondly, higher interest rates mean you use a higher discount rate to value future cash flows, which automatically makes them worth less today.
Right. How does that 14, 17x multiple compare to its peers, like American Tower?
American Tower, AMT, the big global player, generally trades at a premium. They've also seen some compression, but maybe more in the 20 by 23x range recently.
Why the premium for AMT?
Usually attributed to their global diversification, big U.S. market exposure, which is seen as more mature, maybe more profitable, and they have a much longer track record of shareholder returns, paying dividends for years.
Okay. And what about Vantage Towers? You mentioned they were taken private.
Yes, and that's a really interesting benchmark. The take private deal in late 2022 valued Vantage at 26 times its adjusted EBITDA.
26 times. That's way higher than Cellnex's current public multiple.
Exactly. It shows the significant value that private infrastructure investors put on these high-quality European tower assets with those long inflation-linked contracts. It hints at a possible disconnect between public market sentiment and private market fundamental value.
Why would private investors pay so much more?
Well, they often have longer investment horizons. They're less worried about quarterly blips, more focused on those predictable decades-long cash flows. They can also optimize the business away from public scrutiny, maybe cut costs more aggressively, and they have different financing structures. These assets are just incredibly attractive to that kind of long-term capital. It suggests Cellnex might be undervalued by the public market right now.
Interesting point. How does Cellnex compare to other European peers, like the MNOs themselves or Uninviti in Italy?
Compared to the integrated MNOs like Orange or Telefonica, Cellnex trades at a big premium. Orange is around 6x EBITDA, Telefonica maybe 6.9x.
Which makes sense given Cellnex's better growth and margins.
Totally justified. Better growth, higher margins, more predictable cash flows. Compared to its closest public peer, ANWYT in Italy, Cellnex is broadly similar. Maybe at a slight discount recently. Inwit has been around 19x EBITDA.
Okay, let me see if I got those numbers right. Cellnex around 17x now, down from 23x in 22. AMT higher, maybe 22x. Vantage taken private at 26x. ENWIT around 19x. And the MNO is way lower at 6-7x.
That's a good summary of the landscape. But as Cellnex matures, focusing on cash flow becomes maybe more important than just EBITDA multiples.
Right, like that positive free cash flow number.
Exactly. Hitting positive FCF in 2023, 150 meters is huge. And they're guiding for that to grow to 280 euros, 380 meters in 2025. Even more telling is that ROFCF metric, recurring levered free cash flow.
The cash available for debt and dividend.
All right. That hit 1.55 billion in 2023, guided to reach 1.90, 1.95 billion in 2025. That gives a really clear view of the underlying cash engine, which raises an interesting question for investors. Given this new strategy, does analyzing Cellnex based on its RLFCF yield, basically, how much cash it generates relative to its market value offer a more compelling view than traditional earnings multiples, especially for investors looking for stable income?
That's a really good point. Shifting the valuation focus to match the strategic focus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but no investment is risk-free. We need to talk about the potential downsides. MNO consolidation seems like the big one hanging over them.
It's definitely the most talked about risk, yes. The analogy you used earlier, two office tenants merging and needing less space, is spot on.
Merged MNOs cut redundant sites, Cellnex loses tenants and revenue. How do they fight that?
They have some strong defenses, and they've been smart about it. First, those contracts are really robust. Very long term, those all or nothing clauses give them leverage. It's not easy for an MNO to just walk away from a few sites.
Okay, contractual protection. What else?
More importantly, they're being proactive. They're not just waiting for it to happen. They're engaging with the merging operators to turn it into an opportunity.
Like with Mass Orange in Spain.
Exactly. That non-binding agreement is a perfect example. Cellnex gives Mass Orange flexibility to optimize its combined network. In return, Mass Orange commits to a single, bigger, longer contract extended all the way out to 2048.
Wow, 2048.
Yeah, locks in revenue for decades. And the deal includes Cellnex providing more services like 5G upgrades, small cells. It transforms the relationship from just landlord-tenant to a deep strategic partnership, secures revenue, and creates new growth paths.
That's a clever way to handle it, turning a risk into a deeper relationship. Okay, what about interest rate and refinancing risk? Still a factor with all that debt.
It's always a factor for a company like this, yes. Higher rates mean higher refinancing costs when debt matures.
How are they managing that?
They've been very active. They maintain strong liquidity, lots of cash and credit lines. They've spread out their debt maturities, so no huge refinancing cliff is coming up soon. And crucially, having around 80% of their debt fixed rate provides a massive cushion against rate rises.
So most of their interest costs is locked in?
The bulk of it, yes. They say the refinancing needs in the next few years are manageable and will only have a marginal impact on their average cost of debt. And getting that investment grade rating really helps too. It ensures they can access debt markets on good terms.
Okay, seems well managed. What about execution risk? Delivering on those ambitious efficiency targets, that 500 basis point margin improvement.
That's a big one now. The credibility of the next chapter really rests on delivering those operational promises, getting the land co-savings, streamlining operations across 12 countries. It's complex. If they miss those targets, the market could lose faith.
What gives you confidence they can do it?
Well, the plan seems detailed, especially the LandCo part. Bringing in Marco Bautuano as CEO, someone with a strong operational background in telecoms, was clearly intentional. And, you know, their track record since the pivot, like hitting positive FCF early, helps build that credibility. But you're right, the focus is now squarely on internal execution, which is a different skill set than deal making.
Right. Finally, regulatory and political risk. Telecoms is always heavily regulated.
It is. Changes in rules around site permits, spectrum, competition policy, they could always impact the business.
But the current trend in Europe seems okay.
Broadly supportive, yes. Policymakers want private investment in 5G and fiber. They seem more pragmatic now about M&O consolidation, wanting financially healthy operators who can invest. Plus, Cellnex's huge footprint across 12 countries helps.
Diversification.
Exactly. Problems in one country don't sink the ship. It spreads the regulatory risk.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Cellnex, clearly going through this huge, necessary transformation, moving from that hyper-growth M&A phase
driven by cheap debt
to this next chapter. Disciplined, focused on organic growth, efficiency, cash flow, shareholder returns. We've talked about the tailwinds, 5G, data growth, the predictable cash flows from those long inflation-linked contracts, and this clear roadmap they have now.
That's the summary. And the core investment story has shifted, hasn't it? It's less about the excitement of the next big deal, more about boring, perhaps, but crucial operational excellence. It's about the durability and quality of those cash flows.
And the risks are real, but they seem to have strong ways to manage them, especially turning that M&O consolidation threat into partnerships.
Exactly. Their proactive approach there is impressive. And, you know, if you zoom out, Cellnex's journey is kind of a mini example of how whole industries, especially capital-heavy ones, have to adapt to big economic changes and tech shifts. It's a real case study in resilience and reinvention.
It really is. Which leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener. Considering Cellnex has deliberately stepped away from that move fast and break things acquisition model, embracing this more mature, disciplined strategy focused on cash and efficiency. What does that tell us about the future of investing in infrastructure, especially in a world where money isn't free anymore? And how might the shift change your long-term expectations for the companies that, you know, actually build and run the digital world around us? Something to ponder.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll see you next time.